Hey everybody, and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast, as you know, focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I get to interview some amazing people with one of the team from the EV Cafe. And I have got with me today the lovely holidaying, sort of, John Curtis.
Hello, everybody. Yes, I'm out of the pool for about 40, 45 minutes to be with an absolute superstar of our industry.
Absolutely. And you'll all be very pleased to know, in case you attempted to go and watch the visual rendition of this over on YouTube, then John is not in his budgie smugglers, but he is fully clothed for our viewing pleasure. Excellent news.
That's what you think. All you can see is a shirt, my friend.
Right. Quickly, rescue us. Alec Peachey, innovator, pioneer, collaborator, editor of Transport and Energy, and director of Peachey Publishing Services, which I love the name of, because of course it's your name. But anyway, Alec, welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, John, for having me on. Yeah, appreciate all your support over the years since I launched the brand, and great to finally be able to sit down and have a good chat with you guys.
Yeah, we're excited because we've kind of gone on a similar journey over the last few years. 2020 saw you move, first of all, to Elkrig. I think I got that right in terms of a timing thing, but also the launch of Peachey Publishing Services at the time. But It's been quite a journey, quite a stratospheric journey for you, Alec, over the last few years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right, Paul. You've got to say about Elkrig, which is anyone that doesn't know, the local council roads innovation group. So they're a trade association in the local road sector. And at the time when I launched Peachey Publishing Services, or created the business, I was working for them on a consultancy basis and looking after their content and their comms. And at the time, I obviously launched Transport and Energy, which they knew about, and I felt as though there was quite a lot of, comparison in terms of collaboration opportunities, if you like, between the sectors and who I was trying to get to. It was also an opportunity for me to kind of get back into the highway sector, so to get to renew contacts in that space. I used to edit a publication called Highways Magazine back in the day, so I've been out of the industry for a while, so it was an opportunity to refamiliarise myself with that industry. And of course they play a part in the whole clean energy and transport space, of which obviously we're very much focused on in terms of trying to drive collaboration and educate the different stakeholder groups. So yeah, I felt as though, you know, at the time, the two roles work quite well in tandem. But as Transport Energy's grown, of course, that's become my focus.
Are Brilliant. You an editor or a professional journalist? How did you get into this whole field of communicating what's going on?
Yeah, so I started off, John, on local newspapers many years ago as a trainee reporter. So I did what was called the NCTJ in newspaper journalism, the National Council for Training mm-hmm. Journalists, which is a one-year course, or you can do it fast-track, but I wasn't quite clever enough for that, so I did the longer-term version over about a nine-month period, and that encompasses, you know, things like media, law, news writing, local government, central government, and indeed shorthand. So if anyone's ever seen me scribbling what maybe looks like hieroglyphics at any events, then that's me still attempting to try some of my shorthand. And certainly when I passed that exam, that would have been the only time that I wrote 100 words per minute. But that gave me an opportunity to get into newspapers. It was the basic qualification that I needed. So I started off as a trainee reporter, then qualified to become sort of a senior reporter, working on a local paper to me, the Kent and Sussex Courier. Started off on the Tunbridge Wells edition, quite quickly given my own edition to take care of. So that was in a small market town called Edenbridge, which at the time had a population of about 10,000. So that involved responsibility for coming up with the front page lead, page three, page five, page seven, you know, the stories that would go around it. So it certainly focuses your mind in terms of deadlines and how to turn content around. And also I think people skills in terms of interviewing different people of all walks of life, and that, you know, helps you obviously later in life to be able to develop those skills to, you know, interact with all different levels.
Absolutely. How does it feel being the other side of that interview, my friend?
Yeah, well, I'm normally used to asking the questions, not so used to answering, as you can probably tell from my occasional stumble already. But, you know, I think I've probably got more used to it. And I think, you know, although there's a lot of people in this industry, obviously, with much greater technical backgrounds than me. I mean, the day I start telling people how to install EV charging infrastructure, we're all in trouble. You know, that's not my role. That's the role of proper engineers and technicians and actual people with the industry experience to do that. But I think as a journalist, I think what you do learn is you get a good understanding and a broad spectrum of the different challenges and opportunities that the industry's facing, and that gives you a good level, I think, a good standard or a good basic level of being able to understand and look at it probably maybe sometimes from a slightly different angle or perspective to others who are so ingrained in an industry. And of course, that allows you to be able to hopefully speak, you know, on the subject as well.
It's interesting because I looked back and we like to do a little bit of investigative journalism in this kind of podcast. We look to look back and actually, you know, what I find is a nice test of whether somebody is, you know, being successful in their sector is just to kind of Google the name and see if you get the right person come up on Google Images. And actually you get quite a lot of you Google Alec Peachey, quite a list of your face alongside different podcasts or publications and things like that. It seems that you've done a lot well. Now, I need to ask you a question. Do you remember Sarah George?
I do, yeah. She worked on a publication called ED.
That's it. She thought highly of you and gave you a recommendation. But within that recommendation, and it was a very positive recommendation about you being a great team player, showing leadership skills. But she also mentioned that you're a cheerleader. And I just wondered to tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, not an actual cheerleader with pom-poms, but I think what she was probably alluding to. I know, sorry to disappoint the audience, but no one wants to see that. No, I think probably what she was alluding to, you know, and Sarah's a very good journalist, you know, she's been there quite a number of years, and I think what she was probably alluding to was that I always tried to support different people in that business, you know, and I would always, I'm always the first to give credit to other people where it's due. You know, I think it's very important to do that. And even if you're the person who might have created something or come up with an idea or a concept and, you know, taking it from inception to delivery, ultimately you can't do that on your own. You have to do it with other people who you trust and who are hardworking. And I think that I was a great sort of advocate of that within that particular business that I worked for at the time. And that's probably where she was coming from with a recommendation, not the actual metaphoric, you know, cheerleading of a football club or something like that. I think no one wants to see that, as I say.
Alec, I mean, I think I probably guessed, but never make an assumption, though. Never make an assumption, you know, an open question, just in case. Because I do think that this is something that you do seem to have done very, very well. And, you know, the fact that you take industry news from across these two sectors of transport and energy, something that you've been very, very passionate about in terms of bringing together these two sectors that historically haven't had to communicate, and you cheerlead the industry, you cheerlead this sector extremely well by bringing in the news, putting it out, putting your own spin. There was, I think there was some commentary from somebody else, but they talked about how you bring the best out of the stories, you add your take to those stories, you bring your commentary, and you've actually brought together a number of us, you know, from the EV Cafe, both Sarah and I think sit on your editorial board, and comment on our own areas of expertise, be it vans or payments or charging or whatever it might be. And I know that you have a number on that editorial board. So you really do bring together people and then celebrate. And then I think that's kind of what cheerleading's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the whole purpose of launching the brand in the first place was to try and bring these two previously siloed sectors together. You know, people have talked about collaboration and the importance of collaboration for many years, but ultimately, you know, to reach net zero, to reach these targets that have been set, you know, it will only be achieved through collaboration. And you're talking about a number of different stakeholder groups who are involved in this, and you'll know better than I do, you know, how many people are involved in this. In terms of in the past, they wouldn't have even looked at each other, let alone thought about how they need to now work together. And that is exactly what they have to do. They do have to work together. And I think the problem that we do have is that, unfortunately, you know, there's silos that sometimes exist within a silo. And that's the challenge that we need to overcome. And we can only do that by working together and collaborating as much as possible, to be honest. I think, you know, collaboration is certainly the word. And I think that that's been great, not just to see the industry start to do that better, but to start to see the media players in this space do that as well. You know, obviously everybody has their own, you know, targets and their own, you know, commercial successes that they want to meet, but they also recognize that different media brands, you know, where appropriate, we need to come together. We need to keep delivering this message and driving it home. You know, there's a lot of misinformation out there, for example, that needs to be combated. And we have a duty, really, I think, to keep pushing back at that and telling the good stories, telling the positive stories. You know, for us as a trade media brand, it's our job to support the sectors that we represent. And I think ultimately that sort of ties back to your point about cheerleading, and hopefully that's what we've done.
You absolutely have, mate, and I think that's key. And I'm fascinated by the sense of collaboration. Just because you bring people together doesn't mean they're going to collaborate. And we had a story on the news today, which I think was one of yours, where there was an organisation did some research and found that about half of organisations were worried about not achieving net zero, and two-thirds were saying that collaboration is absolutely key, but there are risks inherent within that. How have you practically, what have you learned practically about collaboration? Because you're so successful at it. You do get transport and energy speaking with each other and working together. What are the key lessons that your last 4 years have taught you about that, making it work?
That's a good question, John. I think really, I suppose it's recognising, you know, where the collaboration, the areas where the collaboration is really lacking. Or, you know, where it struggled, for example, not necessarily lacking or for a want of trying, but it's needed a little bit of a push in the right direction. And I think for us, that's been obviously with the local authority side, where, you know, we fully fund council places at our annual event, the Transport and Energy Forum. And what that means is that you get a very good balance of public and private sector in the room, which I think sometimes at events can be difficult to achieve because councils, unfortunately, just don't have the budget. They've got such great pressures on them to deliver different services, whether that's children's services, adult services, you know, fixing the roads, etc., that their money is tight. So by fully funding their places, and that includes accommodation, that means that we get them in the room and we get them talking with the right stakeholders, because you've got to remember the importance of local authorities. Now, local councils have a lot of power. You know, they are ultimately putting those decisions, making those decisions and putting them into action. They're representing the taxpayers, me and you, you know, to if residents are demanding EV charging, you know, and they want to see it in their locality, then a council will generally have to think about acting upon that and do so. So I think that one of the lessons we've learned is on the local authority side to make sure that they're in the room, because they are kind of a gateway to a lot of the other private sector who want to have access to them. So it's almost like they're the sort of the golden stakeholder, really, in a way. But of course, there's others involved, like central government, you know, fleets, etc. You know, the list goes on. And this is the thing, you know, the list is endless. It really is. And there's so many different silos. And this won't be achieved overnight, but it has to be achieved quite quickly. And the only way it can be achieved quite quickly is to just keep driving it forward. I think a good example where we have achieved that was at our event last year, where we recognised that, for example, grid connections has been an issue, you know, in terms of EV charging infrastructure going in place. So we were able to bring members of Charge UK together with National Grid. And I know for a fact Ian Johnston, who was the chair of Charge UK at the time, you know, that led to those discussions starting to happen. And he, you know, he's posted about that, about the success of that. And there's other collaborations that have been brought about as a direct result of our event. And that's nice when you hear that, because you think, well, it's not just a case of, you know, people coming and having a good chat. It's actually tangible outputs. And I think that if you can create tangible outputs, which is what our brand is all about and our community, as is yours, you know, I think that's the key to sort of driving the success in these sectors.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the collaboration platform that you've kind of created is one, you know, built on that sort of cheerleading and shouting positively, so people can trust as they come to you that you're gonna be positive about that, and you're bringing people together, giving them that opportunity to speak. And you know, been very impressed with the Transport and Energy Forum for the two. I think this is going to be its third year now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Very impressed with the way it's grown, the way, you know, the support that you've had, and just the, you know, the communication, the channel that it has become. But it makes me ask, look, how did you come about? You know, because there's so many powerful, not the birds and the bees, Alec. We don't need that.
Yeah.
But you know, as you grew up, and you know, perhaps at school, and then perhaps in early days, just after that, you know, what was it that drove you to be this way? What formed this collaborative, a lot of foresight in the way that you've approached this challenge? You know, what brought all of this about?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Paul. I think for me, you know, I was lucky enough when I worked for a previous publisher, and I was editor of a Highways magazine. That particular publisher, a guy called Neil Levitt, he was very open to new ideas, new products and new launches. And what that did was that created, I suppose, a commercial awareness in me that I didn't know that I necessarily had until the point of, okay, I've got this idea, what do you think? You know, fortunately, he didn't shut me down. You know, if he'd shut me down and said, no, that's not your job to come up with new product ideas or commercial ideas, your job is to put the magazine out and be an editor, then that might have quashed that. But fortunately, he said, do you know what, that's a good idea. Let's give it a try. You know, let's see where it takes us. And I think, obviously, fortunately, that particular product idea that I came up with was a success. It generated revenue for that business. And that, I suppose, in a way, was almost like an awakening and an awareness that I had this commercial sort of, you know, bones in my body, I guess, that I could drive ideas forward. So then I went on and worked for another publisher, and that was on a publication called Network, and that looked at the role of the energy networks, a very niche title. Surprised it didn't make it onto Have I Got News For You, to be honest, but maybe you'll do in the future. But no, you know, and that was obviously it's a heavily regulated market, the energy networks. And to be fair, you know, when I was speaking to them, they were the ones that were telling me it was a huge challenge trying to decarbonise transport, trying to make energy cleaner. And I rather naively said, well, what's the biggest barrier? What's stopping this from happening? And they very often met with the same answer. Both the transport and energy sectors are just not speaking to one another, Alec. They do not work together. Mm. And that was the kind of light bulb moment, if you like, of hang on a minute, yeah, could be onto something here. And because I've had that transport background as well, of course, so I, you know, I've very successfully built up Highways magazine along with a very, you know, again, the team there. It wasn't just down to me. Other people worked very hard to turn that publication around, and it's still going now. You know, it's a very well respected and established magazine and a brand. I suppose what I've done really, Paul, is used the best practice of what I've learned on other brands and brought it into this market. But I think EVs for me, electrification of transport, probably first came into my mindset when I was on Highways magazine, you know, but only very subtly. But maybe that was the start of it, you know, and then it was more so on Network when I was speaking to the energy networks that the energy side came into my mind. And I then ran the idea past, you know, some industry contacts, and they said that they thought I was probably onto something. And I suppose the rest is history. You know, I had the confidence in the end to launch it at a time during the pandemic. I'd actually been made redundant from a previous job. So, you know, then I bit sat the company and, you know, picked up some consultancy work. And that, I suppose, gave me an assurance of income, whilst transport and energy to start with was more of a side project, really. But of course, you know, fortunately, we've started to see the fruits of our labour in terms of what we've done and our strategy, which has been to build it organically, you know, follower by follower and subscriber by subscriber. And I'm very proud of where we've got to, from literally a blank page to where we are now.
It's an incredible growth, mate. And I think what really strikes me is that you've taken it beyond being a digital publication into something physical that delivers results. And the Transport and Energy Forum that you spoke about earlier, which is happening on the 21st of November this year, is one of those very key things that you do to bring people together in a room to make stuff happen. How did that come about? Because that's quite a brave move. You took a risk, didn't you?
I did, John, yeah. I mean, you know, in life, I think it is all about taking risks. And again, you know, I go back to people that I've worked with in the past, and, you know, it was someone who said to me, well, you know, why don't you do this event? You know, what are you waiting for? Just do it. You know, you've got the platform now. You've built up the community. You know, if you can get the backing and you can get some sponsors to make it viable, then just do it. You know, what have you got to lose? And I think, you know, that mentality, I think, is getting stronger and stronger every day, probably, with me. You know, it's learning to not always worry about what others might think. You know, obviously you take on board people's thoughts and feedback, but ultimately, you know, you do have to sometimes make decisions. And I've always thought that there was a gap in the market for, you know, a brand such as Transport and Energy to try and drive that collaboration forward and provide, you know, I think Paul alluded to earlier, that sort of, if you like, an independent, trusted source. I think he used the word trust. And I think that's what we've become. People now come to us. They want to run stories. They want to run content. You know, often we'll be the first platform which will see some stories being run through. Not all, but, you know, certainly in some instances. And I think when you get to that point, you've become that trusted voice. Then obviously from a commercialization point of view, and as you say, making it, turning it into physical products like events, etc., you know, it becomes that bit easier because you've got the trust of the industry. So you have to kind of, I suppose, get your timing right to some degree, but then you also have to roll the dice.
But it takes incredible courage, Alec, and it's, you're a very humble human being, but it takes huge amounts of courage and huge amounts of resilience, because I guess you will have had to shoestring the whole project. You were, you know, very much living day to day, week to week, early doors, which took courage. And then the resilience to deal with those people who say, it's not for me, not going to work. Yet you kept pushing. What is it about you that makes you do that? Was there something in your growing up, your childhood, or as you became a young adult that taught you that you have these skills, these abilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think the word probably I would use is, you know, you do have to be relentless. You know, once you kind of get into this world and you launch something like this, particularly if it's a news-led brand, you know, you can't kind of just have a week off. It's one of those things you have to keep going, you know. And as you mentioned, yeah, you know, it has at times, you know, I've built up a team around the brand, and they're people that I've either worked with or for, you know, and in what, 9 times out of 10, and they're trusted people, you know, that they've been in and around media, events, publishing, you know, they know what it takes, they know how to do this, they know how to put a good event on or put good products around it, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, we're trying to build new products around the brand. You know, once you get that trust, as I mentioned earlier, I think in terms of what drives it and what drives that sort of relentlessness, I think, you know, obviously I've been through things in my life and I've seen things, you know, that have not always been nice, and I think that kind of gives you that what's the word I'm looking for? I suppose it gives you that determination that you have to keep going, you know. Life's not always rosy. And, you know, you do, you know, but also you have to think about your mental health sometimes, you know. You have to take a break. You know, I've seen people suffer with mental health problems myself, and, you know, at times I've struggled, you know, to be honest, and just have to take stock of that and know when the time is right, actually, I do need a break now, you know. And I think that I think that's important because, you know, I've sometimes probably tried to help other people too much, and sometimes you have to take a bit of time for yourself. But just in my nature, you know, it's I like to bring other people on the journey as well, and it's not all been down to me while I've got to where I've got. You know, it's also been with the help of a great team that helps drive it in the background as well. And, you know, hopefully you'll see more from us as we go forward and we continue to try and grow the event.
I was about to ask that. So you've built the publication, you've got Transport the Energy Forum, which is absolutely stunning. What next for Alec Peachey and Peachey Publication Services?
Well, it's a good question. Again, I think for us, you know, we want to probably grow the existing Transport and Energy Forum event. Obviously, this year we're hoping that, you know, we're going to get an increase in delegates again. We're fully funding an increased number of council places with around 60 council officers, all with kind of transport decarbonisation, sustainability roles that are going to be there. We've nearly hit that figure already. So, you know, we're expecting up to probably 300 delegates there this year. So, you know, that's, you know, quite significant growth from year one where we had 130 last year. It was around 220. And this year, I think it will be just under 300. So, and of course, we launched our awards last year and we've grown them this year. We've increased the number of categories. And I think that's important to celebrate excellence. And again, I go back to highlighting the good work in the industry. I think over time, once they get a bit more cemented in the market, this is only the second year that we'll be doing the awards, I think that there's real potential for them to grow and become the kind of awards, prestigious awards, hopefully, that people really, you know, really want to win, and that they're really recognisable for, you know, the best projects and the best collaborations, etc., in the industry. I think wider than that, you know, we'd be looking maybe to do an additional event at some stage, and also, you know, probably getting more into the spheres of deep dives around content and, you know, that sort of combating misinformation, continuing to educate, John Rea. I think education sits at the heart of everything. It really does. Obviously, there's a lot of education that needs to be done at a business to consumer level, but also probably equal, if not greater, is the need to educate at that B2B level. And that's hopefully where we've come in.
Yeah, most definitely. Paul?
Yes. It's hello. It's been an amazing journey, hasn't it, Alec? And I'm one I've you know, as we sort of said, we've gone on parallel journeys. And I don't know, John may have touched on it, you know, the challenges of life are the things that often you know, forge us and really kind of enable us to tackle the, you know, this kind of journey, this growth period, with all the stresses and the strains and the mental health impact that it can often have. What is it in your life? Can you look back on a couple of times where it was really difficult and you learn that actually you've got what it takes to come through those difficult times, and that's what's given you that strength, that underpinning for today?
I think so. I mean, I think, you know, obviously, I've seen family member, you know, suffer quite a bad breakdown, you know, and obviously had to support them through that. And that was, you know, difficult at a personal level, of course, and the impact on the family and so on. You know, so you have to be there as best as you can, but you're still, as you say, you're still kind of in the mix of living your life, you know, day in, day out. And, you know, I've got two boys and, you know, you want to sort of, I suppose, be an inspiration to them as much as I can. And, you know, hopefully they can see what I'm trying to do and trying to achieve and make, I think everybody's trying to make a better future, you know. Ultimately, that's what this is all about. I think, you know, last year at our event, you know, people still talk to me about it now, where we had Rosamund Adu, Kissy Deborah, the Clean Air campaigner who sadly lost her daughter Ella, you know, the only person in the world to have air pollution put down as a cause of her death. And she spoke very, very powerfully about, you know, the work that she's doing to try and clean up our air. And I think sometimes we do have to take that step back as an industry and remember why we're doing this, you know, and the importance of that. So I've kind of transgressed a bit from there. But, yeah, I think looking at my background, you know, those things I've been through have certainly, you know, made me kind of be creating that resilience, I think.
Resilience is it's core, isn't it? It's one of those things that we really, really need to have. And, you know, as for people sort of doing this for themselves, for us, Alec, as we're all building, right? We're building brands. We want your secrets. So we're building brands and growing businesses. What is it you think is really critical in your success and in the success of other people? Obviously not to compete or detract from anything that you're doing, but, you know, how can people be successful? What have you learned in your 4 years of doing this and building this? What are the things that you've learned that can help others?
I think you've already used the word. It is people. You know, I think it's people skills. It's driving collaboration. It's being able to talk to people. It doesn't matter what level they're at. You know, you treat them exactly the same as you would anyone else. And I think, you know, that's how I've been brought up as a person. And I think if you can take those practices into business and do the best you can, I think people respect that and they appreciate that. If you're an honest person and an honest character, you know, you quickly start to create friendships and relationships in the industry, and it becomes wider than just a business transaction. You know, ultimately, it's the old classic saying, but people do buy from people and people support people they like. And I think that really that's probably the key to any business is, you know, keep treating people how you'd expect to be treated, really.
Mm. And do you, as you reflect back on the last 4 years, do you see a point in time where you realised or the business began to take off, you realised it was going to be a success? Was it an immediate thing, or was there a sort of a moment in time when you thought, oh, there's been an uptick right at that moment? This has got the momentum now that it needs.
I don't think it was necessarily an immediate thing. I think probably, obviously, the forum, when we launched that as an event, was a key turning point for us, I think, as a brand, you know, to create a physical product, as John mentioned earlier, and actually bring it to life rather than it just being a digital platform and a newsletter and a website and a fairly significant, you know, social media following. I think it has to be more than that, but ultimately you do have to get your timings right in terms of, you know, you have to get it up to a level before you can probably launch those type of products. So, you know, for a while it's sort of hand to mouth, and then you kind of scale it. And, you know, at the point of when we launched the event, I thought, okay, yeah, this has been pretty well received. And then, of course, we saw the growth last year, almost double the number of delegates. All of a sudden you think, okay, you know, we're definitely in the right space here in terms of what we're doing and in terms of trying to drive that collaboration forward and getting the right people together. Mm. And I think, you know, that's obviously great to see. Hopefully, you know, we can continue to provide that for our platform.
Brilliant.
It's well known, Alec, that the harder you work, the luckier you get, and you work incredibly hard. I've seen myself some of your content coming out at crazy hours, late at night, early in the morning, and you really do invest a huge amount of time and effort into getting news out. Are you somebody who is happy working long hours, or are you one of those people who's very, very smart about the hours that you invest in your time so that you've got time for your kids and your family and other things in your life?
I'd probably like to get the balance a bit better, John, to be honest with you. But I think you do learn over time, you know, when to stop, you know, as I mentioned earlier, and when to take a break. And there are times where it's pretty obvious that you've got to do that, otherwise you're just going to burn out. And if you burn out, you know, you're no good to anybody. Your head's not really in the game, and, you know, you're going to probably possibly make bad decisions. So, I think that I've got better, but of course, as you all know, with any startup business, it's not 9 to 5. You know, goes beyond that, and you have to be passionate about it and be prepared to roll your sleeves up. But you also, I think, have to recognise when you need the help of other people and when to bring them in. And also, if they then need help, when to bring additional support in to maybe help them, so that they don't suffer the same thing that you potentially could suffer with. I think that that is really quite key. And I think that comes with experience and time and working in different on different brands that I have done, and I've built up other brands in the past. And as I say, it's just that best practice really and taking it into this space. But also I've become, I think, more passionate about actually, you know, what we're trying to do, you know, and obviously that is clean up our air, you know, accelerate the transition to zero emissions transport. And I've started to understand better myself the importance of doing that. And a good example, again, was obviously Ella Roberta. And, you know, you hear those stories. And that was why I wanted her to speak. I think it was a little bit left field in terms of it wasn't your traditional type of speaker that you'd necessarily see at those events. But that was the reason I did it, because I wanted people to understand actually this is just that reminder of this is why we're doing what we're doing. Because sometimes we can get lost in the, oh, we've got to deliver this project, we've got to do that, but why, what's the reason? Well, let's take a step back. Yeah. And I think that was a good reminder.
And yeah, and Alec, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, from my time in Vanarama, which was 2020, when that story broke, I was, because albeit she died in 2013, as we know, that the High Court didn't confirm that her death was due to air pollution until 2020. And when that happened, it was something of it wasn't a mindset change, but it certainly solidified that conscience element of what we're doing. We're doing it for a reason. There is a purpose to this. There's clean air. And I think the most powerful fact that Rosamund shared with us whilst at your conference, actually, I think she talked about the deaths related to asthma during the conference. During the period of the lockdown. And the reality was that for the first 3 months of lockdown, we had a situation where no death in a child was attributed to asthma. And that's incredible. That was just, you know, you're like, wow. And then shortly after, I think a matter of weeks after the lockdown broke, we had the first, again, associated death relating to asthma in a child. It cannot be a coincidence. And it's so important that moral compass comes to us all, you know, that it comes to our door. You know, if we don't realise that it's coming to our door through the emissions of a vehicle, it, you know, we can kind of put it off. It's not going to happen to us.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, you're right. That was a very powerful, you know, statistic that she shared with us, you know, at the conference last year. And I think a lot of people were probably, you know, quite taken aback by that. It was obviously a very emotional address. I know a lot of people were quite emotional listening to, you know, Rosamund in conversation with Quentin Wilson. And but also, you know, she's such a what a strong character, you know, she is herself. And to be able to now, you know, campaign on behalf of her daughter, her late daughter, and try to make that difference and, you know, still have a smile on her face as well, you know, it's an incredible incredible story and an incredible woman. And I think, you know, a real advocate for, you know, why we're trying to do what we're doing.
Fantastic. So Alec, I mean, it's been great to understand the journey that you've been on so far. I wonder, what is it that will... We like to give people a magic wand, right? So this, metaphorically, hand you a magic wand. How would you wave that wand at this particular moment in the journey of transport and energy and Alec Peachey and, you know, the wider industry, how we're doing, what... If we handed you that wand, what would you look to do with it? One wish.
Oh, one wish. I don't even get three. Not much of a genie, are you?
That's been said before.
I think from a transport and energy perspective, it would be obviously to see that continued growth of our brand and what we're trying to do in the market in terms of supporting it and driving that collaboration forward. And I think that goes really for the wider sector, just to see collaboration continue at the heart of everything that we do, because I go back to an earlier point, it can only be achieved in that way. If people just continue to operate in silos and don't share best practice, etc., then, you know, it makes it 10 times harder, let's be honest. And actually, sometimes, you know, you've got to put competition aside in order to achieve that. And that's not always easy, you know, but sometimes it has to be done for the greater good. So I hope that collaborative spirit, if you like, of the industry, which I think has been fantastic. You know, I'd like to think that since I've been in this sector that I've hopefully made some friends for life, you know, really, to be honest with you, you know. And as we go forward, it's about those friendships, it's about those relationships, and it goes back to people again. You know, it's only people on the ground that are gonna make it happen. You know, a company is a structure, and it's providing, you know, people jobs to do. But if the people, it's down to the people to do those jobs effectively and efficiently, and just keep driving forward to change. In my view, so just keep pushing, I think.
One of the key things that we ask when we do these podcasts is to try and get behind the job description, the job title, the role that you perform, and to understand a bit about the man. And I wonder, if you had a day off where your family, kids, everybody gone out, no family around, no work to do, how would you spend your day? How would Alec Peachey choose to spend 8 hours on his own?
Well, on my own, good question. I think I used to be a sports journalist as well. So at one point I was a sports journalist. So I'm a big fan of sport, big fan of football. So for me, I'd probably go and watch some football, John, to be honest with you, with some pals and enjoy the game, you know. I do still get to do it occasionally now. But yeah, probably play a bit of football and watch a bit of football, you know.
Who do you support?
Well, I'm one of those annoying people. I've sort of got, this is going to probably divide the audience. I've got one of those annoying people who've got two teams. So I sort of, at a local level, I follow sort of Gillingham. And then if you like, my Premier League team is Liverpool. And that's because my older brother, he supports Liverpool. So that was really the reason, obviously, why as a youngster, you know, I followed sort of in his footsteps to support them as well. So, yeah, you know, but I think, you know, sport in general, I think is a great stress alleviator, you know. And people that play sport at any level, you know, they've normally got that competitive nature about them. You know, it drives that sort of that strategy and that way of thinking, that relentlessness that I spoke about earlier. So sometimes, even if they perhaps lack a little bit of ability in the sport they play, if they've got the tenacity and the work rate, then that can, you know, make up for it. And I don't know, maybe that best sums me up.
He's always on brand, isn't he? That boy, he's always on brand.
He's always on brand. Hey, but I'm with him. I'm with him. I'm a Liverpool fan, and I didn't grow up in Liverpool. No. But all my family are from Liverpool, so that's why I grew up there. And I'm good for that. There you go, kiddo.
Yeah, incredibly scouser.
Anyway, I'm a plastic scouser. yes, so we further divided the audience, Alec. But I think one of the things that wouldn't divide the audience is the performance of Jurgen Klopp and the sort of the impression that he left not only on the club but on the nation in terms of his completely passionate and different approach. And you know, the similarities are not lost on me in that you've brought a passion and a determination to bring people together. And under your management, the industry has moved forward with transport and energy and the impact that you guys have had on the market and the event and all of that good stuff. So it's a fitting way to say thank you to you, to the inspiration that you've been, the quiet dig in the ribs as you've kind of accelerated beyond in certain ways, certainly in terms of followers in LinkedIn and things like that, as people have just absorbs. Yeah, yeah. There's a big smile on his face now for everybody that is not watching. But it's friendly competition, isn't it? And but it's important that we are reaching the audiences that we are, and that the news that you put out, which is very, very often hugely positive and hugely celebratory of the industry widely. I'm not saying you ever put out negative stories, by the way, but just saw a little cloud go across his face there. but yeah, there's lots of positive stories which really help the industry move forward and take inspiration. So Alec, it's really good to have spent a little bit of time with you, but I do want to give you the opportunity to say anything you'd like in terms of closing remarks. Allow that.
Yeah, no, thanks, Paul, and I appreciate your kind words. I think it's probably the first and last time that I'll be compared to Jurgen Klopp, but I'll take it. I think, yes, you know, there's competition, and, you know, competition can be good, but I also think it goes back to collaboration as well. And I mentioned, you know, the media players in this space, of which, you know, we know who they all are, and they're all doing good work, and they all must continue to do good work, because only one media organisation over another is not going to be able to, you know, achieve anything on their own. You know, we all have to keep working, and actually we play a very, very important role in, you know, continuing to educate. And I think really when you look at the misinformation that has been out there, and that kind of tidal wave, that really flags up, actually, you know, how important brands such as the EV Cafe, Transport and Energy, you know, you've got Electric Drives and Current and others, many others, who are all really trying to just keep spreading the good word. And I think so that's what I would encourage people to do, you know, keep talking about the positive stuff that's happening and the difference that we can actually make, you know, as a collective. And I think that's ultimately what we must continue to do.
This has been a joy, hasn't it, John?
It certainly has. So what I love about Alec is he's authentic. Mm. He's the same now as he was when I first met him, and will always be. There's a core to Alec Peachey that you know you can trust. He'll tell it as he sees it. You might not like what he says, but he's absolutely convinced of his course, his path, and he just gets on and does stuff. And you can't argue with that. Top man.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing your journey and your passion with us and with the many people that will listen to this. Do feel free to share it, you know, far and wide, because, you know, this is your story. It's your platform. But I think it will serve. Yeah, yeah. It will serve as an inspiration to many that, you know, with your passion, with a focus, and with a little bit of learning. I think, you know, what's clear is that you learned a lot of things along the way. You had some really good support, mentors, and you've put it into practice, and lo and behold, it's been successful, which is, quite frankly, no surprise because of the man behind it all. So, Alec, we're really grateful, and I'm sure all of you that have been listening along with us would have been grateful too. Please do kind of reach out to Alec, connect with him on LinkedIn, connect with the brand Transport and Energy on LinkedIn, hit up his website. You'll be encouraged to sign up for the newsletter, which is full of really good stuff, so do check all of that out. Of course, check out the many other podcasts on the EV Cafe page. And head over there if you want to learn a little bit more about the EV Cafe. But thank you so much for all of your time, Alec, for yours today. What a wonderful conversation. Thank you again. And until next time, everybody, have a great day.
See ya. Thanks, Alec.
Thank you. Thanks very much.